There's a lot of people that think that breastfeeding is the main contributor to postpartum depression and anxiety. It's not actually breastfeeding.
I did notice that the pain with sex was better postpartum while breastfeeding. And then as soon as I weaned, the pain came back.
There is a syndrome or a phenomenon called post-weaning depression. And it's because of all of these things interplaying all at once that make us feel kind of crazy. It's kind of a whole body change, and it can really suck. It can be intensive and no fun. Here's some common symptoms that you would notice potentially if you were having post-weaning depression or just the hormone shifts. This can all be encapsulated with this.
When do you usually recommend then for people to night wean?
Scientifically, biologically, anthropologically, physiologically, it makes total sense for a baby to want to have milk in the middle of the night for at least that first year. But do I think that they require it and need it? Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is a show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today on the podcast, Dr. Leah and I are going to share all about what is happening in your physiology and in your hormone patterns when you are weaning, because the stopping of breastfeeding can sometimes be a big change for women, and it can feel a little bit like a mini puberty with a lot of ups and downs and even things like vaginal changes. So I kind of break down exactly what's happening with the hormones, why some of these symptoms are coming about, and a little bit on what you can do to help abate those symptoms. So let's go. Okay. Hi, friends. We're back. And we're doing something a little bit different today. And there's going to be a couple more of these shorter episodes. So, you know, some of you have asked to have the shorter ones. Sometimes people love the longer form ones, but it's probably a good idea to have a bit of both, you know, a blend. So today is going to just be a shorter kind of deep dive, but without a lot of the extra fluff, talking about weaning and post-weaning hormones on mom. This is something that a lot of people don't even hear about or think about or talk about. Sometimes people don't really feel it either. So that's great for you. If that's how it's been in your past.
Good for you.
Good for you and your easy time weaning. Because so for some people, it is quite the experience. And with weaning my son, I don't remember anything. I was only like 28, so I don't remember if, and maybe that I didn't feel anything. My second weaning her, I was already pregnant with number three. And so I didn't even really intentionally wean her. I just like kind of lost my milk and she was feeding. It was just very natural over the course of weeks. Weaning my third, I don't remember again. Like it wasn't anything to write home about. Now weaning my fourth was really, really obvious. Obviously, it's also my most recent experience, but man, I had so many ups and downs from that. Do you remember weaning Avia and having any symptoms?
No, I don't really seem to have symptoms postpartum as much as I do during pregnancy. I feel like I just kind of slowly started pulling back on milk and like talking to her about it. She was 18 months. And then I got her a kitty as her kitties instead of titties present. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is that really what you guys said? That's what Mike said, huh?
Yeah, totally. Kitty over titty. That's your present.
Like literally the cat, not a stuffed animal cat. You got like an actual cat.
Yeah, like an actual cat. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that to people who didn't know that you have an actual cat.
Yeah, it was sort of a present for me and for her. It's like, we're done weaning and look how fun, there's a cat.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to have a distraction for sure.
Yeah, but I didn't really have a lot of symptoms. Oh, actually, that's not true. Let me tell you, I'm like the opposite of most people where sex for me postpartum is better. There's something happening hormonally that's the opposite of a lot of people because I normally have issues with like painful sex. And for some reason, I personally think it's oxytocin. That's my theory, that something about oxytocin helps and or my estrogen is lower. And so my testosterone is relatively higher or something. And I did notice that the pain with sex was better postpartum while breastfeeding. And then as soon as I weaned, the pain came back. Which I'm diving more into the pain, and I think it does have a lot to do with the hormones at the vaginal entrance, not low estrogen for me, but low testosterone and maybe other things. And so that was one thing I did notice where I was like, oh no, like it was better when I was breastfeeding actually. But I know some people are the opposite.
Wow. I mean, and I love that you said too, you're just like, I just don't have symptoms postpartum where it overrules my entire life. my postpartum symptoms.
That's how I feel about pregnancy. Yeah.
Isn't it funny how we're so different? And also everybody is, well, we don't cover all experiences here, but we have a breadth of them. We're not the types of people who have had the exact same experiences. So you're going to get a bit of, you know, both sides here. But I basically wanted to break down what's happening in the woman's body as she's starting to wean her baby off breast milk, so that if you are in the camp of going about this, planning it, or deep in the throes of experiencing it already, you kind of know what's going on, you know what to expect. And unfortunately, there's not that much that you can do about it, but we'll talk about that too. So, okay, first of all, we have a whole weaning episode, which we'll put in the show notes, because I personally do think that if you have the luxury and time to slowly wean, little bit by little bit, over the course of weeks and months, that is going to be better for both you and baby. Now, sometimes people don't have that luxury. They have to wean quickly for whatever reason. They're already pregnant. Something's going on, whatever. Okay, fine. We can do that too. The hormonal drop will be less, but it also is then extended out for a longer period of time too. So there's pros and cons to both. But when we're breastfeeding, when we're in lactational physiology, we have higher prolactin. Prolactin is the main guy. It's ruling the whole roost. It's saying, this is what we're doing. We're making milk. It's keeping estrogen and progesterone low. Alongside prolactin is, as you mentioned, oxytocin. Oxytocin makes us feel really good and bonded. And every time you nurse your baby, you get this big, huge rush that bathes your whole brain and body in oxytocin so that you can have the letdown reflex and et cetera. This is probably, we don't know exactly, but this is probably the mechanism which is responsible for the statistic that women who do breastfeed have lower rates of postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, despite common belief. I think there's a lot of people that think that breastfeeding is the main contributor to postpartum depression and anxiety. It's not actually breastfeeding. It's the lack of support around breastfeeding, maybe the stress of it, the stress of pumping and providing, that kind of thing maybe can contribute to poor mental health. But the physical act of breastfeeding, as the studies show very clearly, is protective against postpartum depression and anxiety. So I think that that's good to know going into this, especially if you have friends in your circle who've had really hard times with breastfeeding. I really do get it. I mean, breastfeeding is the complications that I had around breastfeeding were the reason why I had postpartum anxiety with my first, because of just the whole hoopla and what it triggered in me with all of this anxiety, you know, but it wasn't actually the act. So anyway, when we start to shift this now, we are having less of those beautiful oxytocin peaks throughout the day. Prolactin is starting to come down. And estrogen progesterone can go up, but there is still a period of time where it actually takes estrogen a longer rebound time. Progesterone does start to go back up a little bit faster than estrogen for some reason. And so when we have low estrogen, we're going to have this like low mood situation. We're going to have an instability in our mood. When we have low progesterone, we're going to have a lower sex drive, maybe disrupted sleep. And again, still some of these mood things like anxiety and depression, these things can come up more. And now we also don't have this oxytocin thing. So it's not a curve that all snowballs down together in cadence. Each hormone has a bit of its own shifting pattern of how it's going to change. Also, serotonin is changing, which is kind of weird. So we have this strange serotonin thing going on. So our neurotransmitters are affected as well. There is a syndrome or a phenomenon called post-weaning depression. And it's because of all of these things interplaying all at once that make us feel kind of crazy. These also can have body physical effects, like on your vagina specifically, like vaginal dryness, strange microbiome shifts and changes. You might have like the itchy and the discharge and the da-da-da. Maybe you had like a little low-lying candida that now presents itself as a full yeast infection because there is some hormonal change going on, or BV or something. So it's kind of a whole body change, and it can really suck. It can be intensive and no fun, but I do think it's important for women to know that it's, well, I don't know if it's normal, I would say, but it's common and it can happen and you're not going crazy. Now, if you're not experiencing any of these things, it doesn't mean something negative. It's not, we don't want to experience all of these hormones shifts and negative side effects in the postpartum, post-weaning time. It's not like there's physiological benefit to that. It's just what is happening in your brain and your physiology as things are getting less signal. There's less milk removal or the feeds are more infrequent. What I don't find though is that women who only night wean experience these symptoms. I think night weaning for some reason does not, it's more when we're completely actually changing overall milk output with an intent of really weaning. Say you're feeding only half of what a baby that's 0 to 12 months is going to be feeding because, you know, yeah, your baby is between 1 and 2 and now you're feeding them 3 times a day or something like that. That's where we're going to be experiencing this. But like, say you have a 7-month-old, 8-month-old who's a rockin' sleeper and you want to night wean them officially, I would not guess that you're going to experience any of this. This is only in the situation where someone is truly shifting to reduce their overall milk supply as time goes on. As we are talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share with you Needed, my favorite reproductive health nutrition brand. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's entire life. And many women stop their prenatal after birth. But as a naturopathic doctor, I actually recommend continuing it for at least the first 9 months postpartum, or the entire time you are breastfeeding, whichever one is longer. Needed's prenatal multi is the most robust formula I've ever seen. And that's important because if you're going to take the time to prioritize supplements, you want it to count. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, which are well above the bare minimums that we are seeing in most prenatals. Their quality standards are also top tier with transparent sourcing, rigorous third-party testing, and that's why over 10,000 practitioners now recommend Needed. Now, also, they have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study, which confirms what we have seen clinically. Women who take their Needed prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of nutrients critical for postpartum and beyond, including vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, K2, and selenium. Only women in the Needed group reach the sufficient levels of vitamin D, which plays a big role in immune health, energy production, and mood regulation, all things that are very important during that postpartum season. So while there are many ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing your prenatal is one of the simplest and most impactful habits, and Needed makes that easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive, and you can use the code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation or mantra, because you deserve it.
When do you usually recommend then for people to night wean? What is like a good time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's so individual. What I've done with my babies is night wean for the first 3 at 13 months. With Sunday, we night weaned at 11 months for 1 month, and then it reversed itself back for several more months. So I like to get beyond a year for me personally, but that's just because I have this sort of hard line in my mind where I'm like, to be completely honest, scientifically, biologically, anthropologically, physiologically, it makes total sense for a baby to want to have milk in the middle of the night for at least that first year, if not beyond. But do I think that they require it and need it at least through 6 months? I think yes. Between 6 and 12 months, if you want to night wean your baby and they're showing signs of really good weight gain, they're feeding really well during the day, and they're good sleepers, they're ready for it, etc., then again, go for it. Or in the situation where your baby is awake constantly trying to nurse and you're pretty confident that, you know, they are getting enough milk during the day. It's not that they need that milk at night as much. It's more of like a comfort thing, which every individual mom is going to know. Is your baby feeding for comfort, or are they feeding for habit, or are they feeding because they are hungry? Like, you will figure that out in time. Truly, I believe that. And if your baby is hungry and they're a slow weight gainer, then like, it's just our responsibility to feed them at night when they need to be fed. And it could be your partner feeding them a bottle. But if you're not going to be pumping at that time, it may impact your supply. So know that. With our third, she was a terrible, terrible, terrible sleeper. And we attempted to night wean her at like 8 or 9 months. It did not go well. I was going absolutely insane. So I think that there is a situation where if the sleep is so bad that night weaning can help get a baby sleeping through the night, you can go ahead and try it. It's just not always going to work. So, I mean, I don't know. For me, I think after 6 months for sure. And then, but again, there are going to be those babies that are just doing really well. Or maybe mom will dream feed. So obviously you're not night weaning then because you're dream feeding them. I just think that those cases are on the more rare side. So I don't want a blanket statement say, you know, that it's normal. I would say that is not the normal common situation that a baby under 6 months is going to happily take to a night weaning plan. But again, there will be some. And I think honestly, my son would have been that kid. He would have been great to night wean because he just naturally was a great sleeper and he was gaining so much weight so quickly, et cetera, et cetera. It's more normal though, sometime closer to 1.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Okay. And so then let's talk about, prolactin is decreasing. when you're in this process of night weaning. And it also has its like buffering kind of calming effect. So without that, now we're starting to feel a little bit more on edge. And something that I really felt with this fourth weaning process was just this mood swings, like up and down and up and down. And one minute I felt like this, I felt like I was going through puberty or something. And I didn't quite connect what was going on until I was through my luteal phase, because sometimes I can be like that in my luteal phase. But then once I was, when I was still like that through my period, through my next follicular phase, I was like, oh, this is probably weaning. Because just as these things shift, it takes some time for these hormones to get into their normal set of loop or set and loop.
Yeah.
Okay, so then oxytocin's fluctuating. You're not really getting that as many surges because you're not getting that like bonding touch from the letdowns and, you know, the whole thing. Even if you're pumping, you're still getting oxytocin because of the letdown. So it's not necessarily all about the cuddle with the baby. So this can lead to more like temporary sort of emotional lability, the sadness, sensitivity, maybe even feeling a little bit flat. And then estrogen and progesterone are going to rise slowly. And if you're trying to conceive, we have another episode on that too. If you're breastfeeding and trying to conceive, we'll link that in the show notes as well. And if you're trying to conceive, I do think the best thing that you can do is night wean, because your chances of getting a better progesterone, a better ovulation, stronger ovulation are higher. But my top situation blanket statement in general would be ideally a woman does fully wean her other child prior to conceiving the next child and maybe has like a 3 or 4 month window in between to allow the hormones to fully settle in and get to like a good place with everything so that it can be very robust.
So just like you mentioned, the ups and downs, feeling crazy, feeling like anxious, like all over the place, sometimes that is from low progesterone. And like you mentioned, even with you and your luteal phase, sometimes you can feel like that. To me, that's a big ding ding to check your progesterone and potentially maybe why you've had early miscarriages, because that low progesterone picture leads to early miscarriages, and that can happen post-weaning. If you aren't getting your hormones back in balance, and stress and nutrient deficiencies and inflammation are the three things that make us have low progesterone. And so if you've been breastfeeding a baby, you came out of pregnancy breastfeeding, so you're nutriently depleted if you're not replenishing well, not eating a lot because you're whatever, you're sleep deprived from having the baby, like you're in a very different situation. So I just want to highlight that for someone who is trying to conceive again, to be mindful of that progesterone, maybe get it checked, do extra things to support it, because I wouldn't want you to go into that next pregnancy and then actually have a loss because you're in a very different place than you were when you were maybe conceiving the first child, maybe if you didn't have a loss that time. So just wanted to bring that up.
No, it's important. And also, if you haven't had your cycle back yet and you're weaning your baby, this is a time where you might now get it. And so if you don't want to conceive, be very careful, because your ovulation can be, well, first of all, it can just be variable. So say you were somebody like you or me, where we breastfeed our babies exclusively, but at some point we do get a cycle back and it's really consistent month after month. Some people aren't like that, but you and I are. During your weaning, your cycle might completely change. So again, if you're not trying to get pregnant, you either need to be tracking or using some kind of a protection, because you may not ovulate on your normal day. Your cycle length may shorten, it may lengthen, it may skip. You may have an anovulatory cycle, or similarly, because this is just a really wild, it's the wild, wild west for a couple of months, okay? But similarly, if you hadn't had your cycle back, you might get it. And what's going to happen first is you're going to drop that egg first. So, and you're not going to necessarily know that you dropped that egg. You're going to think, oh, well, I don't have my period back yet. But you would be bleeding then 2 weeks later, unless you're having sperm and vagina sex, and then now you can be pregnant. So just know that this is a inconsistent time. If you're a charter, that's great. But again, you're going to need to be using some other additional method to prevent if you really don't want to become pregnant. But charting will help you see, oh, there was my ovulation. I didn't have any symptoms with that, or da da da, or maybe it stays consistent. But just expect that if it, not expect, but know that if it doesn't stay consistent, then that's okay. And that would be like normal too. Okay, so estrogen and progesterone are back on the rise. They're trying to re-regulate and normalize. And, you know, as you were mentioning something about sex too, sometimes people, most of the time, I would say, during lactational physiology, have a lesser sex drive. And that's protective so that we don't get pregnant again. And then we don't have milk for the baby that we have in front of us, et cetera, et cetera. We have all these suppressed hormones, which are, you know, interplay with ovulation. And a lot of women really only feel spikes in libido around ovulation. So in an anovulatory state, there is not that up and down of libido rising and falling. Now, as you're weaning, maybe some of that's going to come back online for you, which is cool. Or maybe it will not, because there's all these other things that are happening that can feel kind of bad, or you just feel very moody and off. Also, the first period back after weaning, even if you've had a cycle through your breastfeeding time, for me at least, I don't know about you if you remember this, but for me, every single time I've weaned, that first period after I was fully weaned is always a monster. And I don't even have monster periods, but it's like heavy or clotty or really long. It's like a very intense situation, I guess, because everything is coming back online fully. Like estrogen and progesterone are fully back in town, and you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember. I don't know how you have a memory that can remember these things. I have one child and I don't.
Because it's really obvious. No, it's like a very, very obvious thing.
I don't remember anything about that. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know. Maybe not. I mean, I guess I'm so used to having more crazy periods that maybe it would be such a stark difference for you. I know my first period back while breastfeeding is kind of intense, clotty, that kind of thing. But I just don't remember. Gosh, I did it really slowly, though. I weaned really slow.
Yeah, and that's helpful. I'm a big fan of weaning slowly because it just takes the edge off of all of these things. Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. One other thing I just want to say is that thyroid and adrenal glands can also be impacted by weaning. It can just be an acutely, you don't need to necessarily do something, but if you are somebody with hypothyroidism and you're on meds and you feel like something is not right, you know, you might want to go and get tested, make sure that your medication dose is proper for this. Taking adrenal supplements throughout this entire time, I do think is a great idea. The adrenal supplement that we really love that is safe in breastfeeding from day one postpartum, you just can't take it during pregnancy. So no during pregnancy, but as soon as your baby is out of your body, the needed stress support is back. We love it. We're huge fans. I'm like, I just wish I could take way more than the dose that you're supposed to take. I don't know what would happen. I've never done that. I promise you, I really haven't done that, but it's my most favorite top supplement I think I've ever taken in my entire life. Truly. And now also it contains saffron, which is, so it reformulated. It was out of stock for 100 years and it was so sad. We were all so sad. And now it's back.
I know. I actually helped reformulate it. I designed that formula.
Yeah. And I was on the team too. I didn't know that you were the main one.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
Right. I was before I had my baby. Me and Aletta worked on it. And then we both went and had babies. That's partly why it was out of stock, because it was two pregnant women who were planning it. And then we both literally had babies at the same time when postpartum. And so they had to circle back. It's like, this is what happens when women run businesses. It's like,
And that's okay, because you know what? It all works out in the end. So, okay, well, then we've both been, you know, team formulators. That's so funny. We never had a conversation about that. I am so happy, though, that it's back out. And so you, again, just to reiterate, because people will ask, yes, you can take the needed stress support while you are breastfeeding. Yes, it's a great idea, too. And if you haven't been taking it and you're like, you also don't have to be breastfeeding to take it. You could just be a normal person out in the society who needs some help with their and support with cortisol rhythms with. And then now with saffron, it has this more mental emotional side to it thing, which is very sweet and great specifically too for this population. But know though that there is a bit of a taxing high demand of the process of weaning on adrenal and thyroid, but it's okay. And it should kind of rebalance in time. It might be a good idea though to take a supplement if you haven't been taking one. Okay. And then I basically just want to, we're coming up on the 20 minute mark. We're trying to keep these 20 minutes, which is here we are. So I just wanted to say it again, that here's some common symptoms that you would notice potentially if you were having you know, post weaning depression, or just the hormone shifts. This can all be encapsulated with this. Okay, so more anxiety and irritability, night sweats and hot flashes, which again should just be very temporary around this time and not continue, because that can be a sign of other things. But these like mood dips, these transient depressions, or feeling very like a unstable, not on solid ground anymore. Your cycle might change. It might come back. It might be really different. And then a fatigue and a brain fog, again, as everything is trying with your neurotransmitters, is also shifting. Now, this is not related to hormone shifts as much, but something going on in your breasts to be careful of is getting too full, getting clogs, getting mastitis. So this is another reason why I'm very pro going slow with your weaning, because it's so frustrating to be like 18 months postpartum and get a clogged duct or to get mastitis. And it feels like, what? How is this happening now at this point? And man, it can really just kick your booty. So you don't ideally want to go super fast, because you're much more at risk for all of those things. So if I had to give you some of the tips and the tricks of things really fast before we go, it would just be to, again, go slow, go gradual with things, take an adrenal supplement and support. Also, have talks with the people around you, like your partner or your close friends, whoever's going to be in close contact with you that you're going through this right now, so that they know that there's something big happening in your hormones. It's like when we become pregnant, you know, you understand that the pregnant lady might be more emotional. She's going to cry at the drop of the hat. She's going to do different things. And it can be a microcosm of that, not as intense, but a microcosm of that when we're weaning, to say, hey, my friend is weaning. If I can be extra supportive, or at least just like have grace on her moods, then that's great. And, you know, continue along with all of your normal supplements. The other thing that you can do that sometimes doesn't work out because you have a little kid, depending on how baby, you know, old your baby is and stuff, is focus on your sleep and your circadian rhythms, because those are really big hormone things. That might not be something you're able to do much with, but if you can, try to get into bed at the same time every night, try to wake up and get the light in your eyes, etc. And if this is something that you cannot do, for sure, something you can enact more is to stabilize your blood sugar. So I know that's like one of your hills to die on. And it really is just so true. For hormone health in general, the fastest way to stabilize your hormones after any major shift and transition is going to be to keep your blood sugar stable, your circadian rhythm strong, and to support your adrenal glands, truly. So I guess there is stuff you can do. It doesn't feel like, oh, well, that's happening, so just take this one X supplement. And I mean, the adrenal support, the stress support from Needed is kind of that. But again, it's multifaceted in this particular instance.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. Rapid fire, all the things you need to know in 24 minutes.
There you go. There you go, guys. If you're weaning, here you go.
That's perfect. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Well, I mean, I'm not weaning yet, but it is going to be in my future eventually. So I benefit from these just like everybody listening. I learned so much from you as always. Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
Thanks. Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. It stinks, but there are things that we can do to support their immune systems, their symptoms, and the progression of the illness. And so it's something I'm asked all of the time, and I created a course for you. So if you've ever been wondering what are my top remedies, the homeopathics, herbs, nutraceuticals, home remedies, supplements, anything and everything that I like to use for pediatric immune health from newborns on to big kids, I have made a course for you, and it is called the Natural Cold and Flu Care Course for Children. Not a very original name, but it's very useful, and you will use it again and again to revisit it each time that your child is sick. So you can find the information for that in the show notes.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.